This is the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball national team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome back to the Inside Pitch. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We are going to be back in a minute here with our great, great hitting coach and instructor, Troy Silva. We've had a great first half. This is the second half of the show. Before we begin with Troy, we'd like all our listeners, if you're going to buy something on Amazon, do us a favor. First, go to our website, click on Amazon banner. It doesn't cost you anything, gives us credit, and helps keep the show going. Go to Amazon.com. You can purchase also Troy Silva's book, Ninth Inning, and also my book, The Youth Baseball Drills, again, on Amazon. If you'd like to know more about our show, anything, any questions you have about the show, any baseball questions, you know, we love getting all your information and all your emails, and we'll respond right away. So go to peter@insidepitchpodcast.com, and don't be afraid if you have somebody that you know out there that's a great teacher that you want us to interview. Let us know about him, and we'll him or her, and we'll be glad to put him on the show. Okay, so right now we're going to be back with Troy Silva, again, one of the up-and-coming hitting coaches around. Let's continue our talk on myths of hitting and teaching philosophies. Troy, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm ready.
You ready to go? All right, we were just ending the last show with, they were talking about bat speed and you know, and how to increase bat speed. I think if you go to Troy's book, you'll get a lot of great information on that. You know, when you have a lot, let's continue with this. When you have a young kids and, you know, they're trying to figure out their swing, they're trying to figure out what bat to use, what's your recommendation? That's a real tough thing for young coaches, especially young dads and moms that are teaching nowadays.
As far as, like, what size bat is a hard thing to just kind of explain. You know, there's some things out there that I guess kind of work but don't. It's just kind of dependent on kids' athleticism, coordination, strength. So that's kind of a hard thing to talk about as far as what bat to use per se. But what I've learned is kids these days, they have a tendency to swing a smaller bat than they can swing. It's because maybe they have swing flaws that someone sees and they think that a smaller bat will help that. When in actuality, the smaller bat actually makes it worse. You can't feel the barrel head. You can't feel the swing itself. And you can't swing the bat as quick as you can. I got a five-year-old boy who's pretty strong. He's a pretty good little athlete. And I make him swing a heavy 29-inch bat and drop 10. So it's kind of hard to say over the air. But, yeah, it goes back to just giving them what they need depending on their own strength and athleticism.
Sure. And now you got this young man that's going up the home plate. You know, obviously, you know, kids that go through your program have a huge advantage. But for kids and coaches and parents out there that, you know, are not in your program, what's the number one or what's the one thing that you tell them, listen, if you're going to go to home plate that they need to think about, what would that be? Is there a thinking process when you hit?
Yeah. Are you talking about a younger, like, little league type kid?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times, you know, as we talked about earlier, you know, there are a lot of kids think mechanics because that's all we work on many times. So now mm-hmm. we're talking about their feet, their hands. But as far as hitting, what's their, mm-hmm. you know, instead of the mechanical aspect, since it blocks, you know, their ability to do things, what do you recommend the young kids to, what should they be thinking up there when they hit?
Well, I guess a blanket approach to Little League all the way through a pro level idea is, number one, you should never be thinking about your swing, ever. I tell parents and kids, if you're thinking about what your swing is doing at the plate, you're already beat. You can't compete. So you should never be thinking about your swing. You think about your swing maybe pregame, maybe do on deck a couple little reminders. But once you step in that box, it's a battle between you and the pitcher. So the only thing you should be thinking about is approach and plan. And how that's figured out by is basically watching the pitcher. You got the pitcher warming up in the bullpen. You got the pitches in between innings. You got the other at-bats that are before you. You got to analyze what the pitcher's trying to do to get you out. And they come up with a specific plan and approach without overthinking in there and get in there and get it done. So, you know, whether the pitcher throws a lot of fastballs away or maybe they throw a little bit slower, you got to move up in the box, or maybe they throw, you know, 100% fastballs and they try to dominate you with fastballs. You've got to have an easy, quick approach. Again, this is dependent on kind of what level you're at, but it's more about just having an approach for that pitcher versus just thinking about what your swing's supposed to do.
So it's particular to a pitcher. And also you've mentioned, you know, don't worry about working the count that much.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's dependent on what level you're at and what type of hitter you are. If you're a hitter that doesn't get rattled with, you know, one or two strikes on you, then you can take some pitches and kind of, you know, I guess know what your role is for that team. But especially at an earlier age, you got to get pitches that you can crush early in the count and crush it. So I teach all of our kids, you know, at a young age to get ready to hit the fastball. You're going to get a lot of fastballs at a young age. And don't miss it if it's a strike. If it's blown away on the black on the knees, then let it go and let that pitch be. But if it's a fastball on the plate where you can crush it, smash it. And that's why I think a lot of our younger teams hit well, just because it's a simple, easy philosophy is not missing a fastball. So as you get older, then, yeah, you can take some pitches. And, again, it goes back to who the pitcher is and what the pitcher's trying to do. Does the pitcher throw a lot of strikes? Do they hit their spots, or are they a little erratic? So it's kind of dependent on what the pitcher's trying to do, though.
Sure, there's not that cookie-cutter thought. It's just that depending on who you're facing also. Now, you're seeing in the big leagues, too. I mean, you take the Chicago Cubs. You're seeing their, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, they see first-pitch fastball. They're going after it because they may not get that real good pitch a second time.
Yeah, I love John Malley. I think he's doing a great job. He's the hitting coach there. You know, this even in the big leagues, it's so individualized at the big league level. I mean, those hitters don't need hitting coaches. I mean, they just need confidence coaches. So it's like they know what works for them. They know what they need to do. What the hitting coach needs to do is provide information for that pitcher, what the pitcher's tendencies are, so it gives them an idea of what might happen, and then the hitter kind of, you know, does what they do. The overall approach from a big leaguer is individualized, but it's also the same thing at any level, is that you've got to be able to hit the fastball. And if you can't hit the fastball, you're just not going to last very long with baseball. So I agree with that. Is the fastball such an important pitch that you have to consistently hit the ball hard on the barrel, or else you'll get weeded out pretty quick.
Yeah, and you also talk about, you know, it's out of your control. I mean, you see this a lot with young hitters. They hit a ball, it's a line drive, you know, and the guy catches it, and, you know, then they get all upset. And the guy that should be upset is the pitcher, because he's the one that, you know, gave up the line drive. I'm sure you see that a lot, and that affects their hitting.
Yeah, I see it. I mean, I used to do it. I'm sure you used to do it, too. It's you hit it hard, you feel like you want some results behind it, and it doesn't fall. So I think the batting average, you know, obviously it means a lot to a lot of things as you get older, but at the same time, it's the focus in your head as a hitter needs to be to hit the ball hard. After you hit the ball hard, there's not really much you have control over. I mean, you, in a baseball game, you're not going to place it where you want it. I mean, your focus is to hit the ball square on the barrel, hit it hard. If they catch it, they catch it. If they don't, they don't. But I agree. Too many times kids these days get too upset, you know, that they should be getting a hit when they hit it hard, and that's just not reality of what goes on.
And I would assume, I mean, when you're getting upset, you know, I remember even when I played racquetball, that really hit, you know, when I got mad at the ref or got mad at, you know, at something like that, it always affected my ability to think of what I'm going to do next.
Yeah, it does hinder you. It does. There's a lot of kids that will take it into their defense or take it into their next at bat, and it does affect not only them, but affects their teammates too. You know, that kid that comes back and he's all mad and throwing helmets, and it just creates this team chemistry of just kind of division versus, you know, we're on the same page here. So I'm not saying you need to, you know, strike out and walk back to the dugout with a smile on your face, but at the same time, you got to get over it quick. I tell kids you have 5 seconds. You have 5 seconds to get a little angry and mad. Maybe you're running down the first base, and then after that, it's over. Move on to the playing defense. Figure out a way to be a good teammate, and I think that's kind of what it comes down to is learn how to be a good teammate, no matter if it's hitting well or playing D or just maybe encouraging somebody. I think too many times the focus on the batting average allows us to get selfish, and then, you know, you create this character or this this aura about you that no one wants to be around.
You know, for our coaches around the world, I think that's something important that you said. You allow 5 seconds, you know, because we got to get mad. So you allow that 5 seconds, and then that lets them release all that, and now they can get ready and concentrate on the next thing. You know, Joe Maddon, which ironically, you know, after a loss, you know, he gives them 30 minutes to just relax, be quiet, not much. And after that, they turn on the music, you know, they turn on the foam machine. They have all kinds of strobe lights in their clubhouse. I think it's a very similar philosophy.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, what it comes down to is it's a game. And there needs to be fun in the game. And, of course, you know, you're talking about the big league level. These guys are getting paid, so they're paid, obviously, on performance. But, I mean, until you're really getting paid to play baseball, you better be having fun, and you better be putting a smile on your face and enjoying it because, number one, you're not guaranteed to play tomorrow. I mean, something can happen where you're injured, you're done for the rest of your career. No one's guaranteed it tomorrow anyway, so you might as well enjoy what you got going on for today.
Exactly. That's well said. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to talk about was because, you know, we see a lot of young kids, you know, obviously they're hitting a lot. They might say hitting a lot, either taking lessons or they're in cages hitting and all that. And your friend and my friend, you know, Steve Springer, I've heard him talk about, you know, strength. I want you to address that a little bit because at the young levels, you know, a lot of these kids aren't real strong. What's more important, getting in a cage hitting a lot, or is it developing strength, or, you know, what's the balance?
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't really start weight training here until they're about 14 years old. By the way, I love Steve Springer. Steve, if you're listening, you're awesome.
Yeah.
Great guy, great confidence guy. I agree the strength is very important. So, like I said earlier, you know, everything kind of adds up to this whole total philosophy on hitting. You know, strength's a big deal. I mean, I wrote in my book about the steroid era, about how important the steroid era was. Not that steroids make you a better hitter, but how important strength is in hitting. So the strength specifically gives you confidence. It gives you the ability to trust yourself more. You know, it gives you the ability to get in there and compete, knowing that you're strong enough and quick enough to get to the ball. But I agree. I think strength is one of those things that add up, one of those pieces of the puzzle that will allow you to compete at a higher level or not. And, you know, there's only so much you can do until you're a little bit older. But, you know, the 10 to 12, 13-year-old kids, you can do push-ups, you can do squats, you can do pull-ups, you can do your own body weight stuff, and it's not going to hinder you too much. But strength, once you turn into that high school level, is what really separates the men from the boys, per se, I guess. It's definitely something that has to be an important focus as far as developing as a hitter.
Well, well said on the younger kids also. You know, they can do their body weight. What about let's take the high school guys, and as you start getting older, is there particular areas of the body that needs to be stronger because of hitting to help your hitting, or is it just an overall development of the body?
Well, we can go down a whole different route this way too, but I wrote in, I think it's chapter 3 included into the bat speed portion, there's a whole strength portion about what specific body movements need to occur to become a better hitter. So I'm actually a certified personal trainer as well, but the strength is definitely something that if you're in high school and beyond, you need to start doing, or else you're just not going to be able to compete at a high level. And as far as what to do, in my opinion, it's this whole philosophy these days of, you know, functional movements. And I've seen kids do workouts not even sweating. I mean, whatever happened to getting in the weight room and throwing some weights around and getting a little stronger? I think weight training is a serious hindrance if you're not working on the mental side of weight training. Kids these days do 10 reps and they're working on functional training. They're not even sweating. They're not even competing. If you go compete in the weight room and you go get that mentality up, guess what's going to happen in the box? You're going to be tough in the box too as well. So I'm not saying to be crazy and go, you know, work on max bench pressing every day of your life, but I am saying get in there, throw some weights around, get aggressive, learn how to develop a mentality in the weight room on top of just strength, and you'll see that the hitting actually will increase quite a bit.
And, you know, since we're on that, let's even talk about this subject's come up several times, you know, the weighted bats, or even the donut at the end of the bat, a benefit, not a benefit. You're seeing guys changing and not some of them not using the you know, the heavy bat or the donut, which they call at the end of the bat. Any preferences there?
Well, we use weighted bats every day. You know, the sports scientists of the world will tell you, well, you know, using a donut doesn't specifically get your bat speed to increase. Well, I'm not a sports scientist, and I'm not claiming to be, but from my everyday observational science on a regular basis with kids that swing heavier bats does something to their mentality on a regular basis that allows them to get in there and swing their bat more aggressively. Even if it doesn't register that way, they think it's swinging harder. So it's more of a confidence booster than anything else. And we do it especially with our younger kids. We use different weighted bat systems in here, but we use a hitting jacket. So a lot of major leaguers will use those. We have specific things that we've developed here. But if you're not using some sort of weighted bat, especially in the off season, then you're severely limiting your ability to swing your normal bat faster. And the question I have to those sports scientists people out there that says it doesn't work, then why does every big leaguer swing a weighted bat on deck? Every one of them does. It does. It gets you loose. It gets you confident. It allows your regular bat to feel lighter, which builds confidence. So in my opinion, even if the actual results aren't there physically, what it does to the mindset is huge as far as confidence and being able to get in there and compete.
You know, that brings up a good point, because when I was a kid and even, you know, in high school and college, I do remember when I swung a heavy bat right before, well, I felt like I had a toothpick in my hand when I went up the bat.
Yeah. Yeah, and the funny part is when I played, everybody shared the same bat. Whether you were 5'2", you were swinging that 34, you know, 31-inch bat. You better figure it out.
Well, listen, a lot of kids have, you know, this is a probably a lot of coaches, I should say, have a tough time addressing this issue with their kids. You know, we're not all fortunate like we used to be in the Northern League. Remember, we played the same team, you know, so many times. We knew all the hitters. We knew how to pitch to them and all that. But when you're in high school, younger levels, you know, you don't know who the pitchers are. Where do you start to identify the pitcher, you know, the pit, what kind of pitch or where he's releasing from? Where does that all begin, and how do you discipline your young, your kids to kind of create that good habit of doing it all the time?
Yeah, well, in the big leagues, in the minors and stuff like that, there's scouting reports. In the big leagues, you got crazy scouting reports, the stuff that's probably too analytical, in my opinion, sometimes. But in college, you get, you know, scouting reports on guys. But if you're in a situation where you're maybe high school or younger and you just don't know anything about that pitcher, you have to analyze them in warm-up. So when that kid's warming up, when that kid's doing their, you know, 6 to 8 pitches in between innings, you have to analyze, like I said before, other kids at bats. You have other kids at bats that are before you, and you can see what that pitcher does. Does his ball sink? Does his ball tail? Does he miss high? Does he miss low? Does he like his curveball? Can he throw off speed for strikes? I mean, there's so many things that kind of add up that will give you information that's valuable information before you go into the box. And to have that information to go into the box and to not overthink it is huge. I mean, if you know a kid that misses high, this is just what happened, I guess, this last week. We had a pitcher that threw pretty hard. He was missing high, missing high, missing high. When he missed high. So all we told our hitters was, hey, get the ball down in the zone. If you get one down in the zone, crush it. And it was just a simple approach adjustment to that pitcher right there in the middle of the game that just made a huge difference. So every pitcher will usually have some sort of tendency, and your job as a hitter is not to sit in the dugout and tell jokes and play games. It's to figure out those tendencies that will give you valuable information and an approach that will help you create better on-field success.
You know, and as we go into, you mentioned the word adjustment. I had it written down because I heard you talk about this at one time. You know, let's take a hitter, you know, that is off time. Because I'm assuming, you know, and again, you know, I'm assuming that you're going to be off time a lot of times. You're not always on time. You hope to be on time, but you're going to be off time. And you said something about you have to make an adjustment. And it doesn't look pretty all the time, but you got to make that adjustment. Explain that.
Well, the funny part about that question is I was literally watching – I watch a lot of baseball, obviously. I watch hitting. I was watching Major League Spring Training game. It had to be probably 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago. And it was like hitter after hitter after hitter would just either lunge at the ball or flick their bat at the ball or just not have this kind of ideal perfect swing. And I'm going, man, these guys are still getting hits out of it. They're still hitting home runs off of it. And I just had this, like, premonition, like, that's what I used to do, and that's what most hitters do to be successful is adjust to the pitch. You're going to have your time when you're on time, and you're going to have your times when you're perfect with your swing and everything matches up perfect and you're going to crush, but there's going to be a lot of times, too, where you're fooled by the ball. You're fooled by the pitch. You didn't recognize curveball. You know, you just didn't see it very well, and you have to make a quick, natural adjustment. And if you go – I'm challenging everybody listening right now. If you go watch a major league game tonight, it baffled me when I saw it. You'll see probably 20 to 25% of the swings that are hit in play of not perfect ideal contact points, but the hitter made a quick adjustment, still, you know, put the ball in play or hit it hard. So I say all the time is sometimes a swing has to be ugly in order to be a great hitter. And that's kind of what we were talking about earlier is I think kids these days are so consumed with their swing being so perfect that it doesn't allow them to adjust. They'd rather have a perfect swing and strike out than have an ugly swing and hit a double. So it's something that we actually work on here. It's we say get out of your perfect swing sometimes. Learn how to be an athlete. We teach athletic hitters, not just, you know, this robotic system of having to do it like this guy does it. And if you train yourself to actually learn how to adjust the pitches, now you're going to square up more balls, put more balls in play, and have better success.
You know, that makes so much sense. And I love the part that you said about that you got to train that way, you know, and you got to train kids to do that. I'm assuming it's very similar, like staying through the ball longer. I mean, if you stay through it longer, that'll allow the bat to get to that point of contact?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what it is. No matter where the adjustment is, up, down, in or out, way out in front, way deep, your body has to make a slight adjustment to find the barrel, basically. So, you know, you'll see in a big league game, you'll see hitters lunge at the ball, and you'll be like, oh, that was an ugly swing, but he's standing on second base with the double down the left field line because he lunged at it. You know, he made that slight adjustment, and he stayed through the ball, like you said, and still hit the ball on the barrel of the bat. Your goal as a hitter is it to perfect the perfect swing? Your goal as a hitter is hit the ball in the barrel. However that's done, you've accomplished your goal.
Yeah, see, and I remember, and boy, you're just lighting up the light bulb here. I remember times when I was about to get jammed. I'd even lean back so I can get the barrel there. And times I got a hit.
Barry Bonds did that all the time. One of the best hitters ever would lean back just to get his barrel to the ball and crush balls 500 feet.
Yeah, my ball didn't go quite as far as Barry Bonds, but yeah, I did that.
But great hitters make great adjustments and sacrifice their perfect swings in order to hit the ball hard.
Well, I'm glad we talked about that because I don't think you hear enough about the adjustment part because, like you said, you're always trying to be on time and perfect, and that's not always going to happen. All right, the magical word, and I should have brought this up earlier, but sometimes, you know, during the talk, it sparks something, and the magical word you hear all the time is balance throughout the swing if possible. How important is balance? I mean, it sounds important, and I guess it is important, but how important is it?
Well, it's important, obviously. You got to have good balance. You can't be off balance consistently and be consistently good at the plate. But I think it goes back to just interpretation of balance and what balance really means. Because if you're fooled on a pitch and you have, you know, perfect swing balance, you're not going to hit it. But if you're fooled on a pitch and you make an adjustment and you stay balanced and stay under control, you're still going to hit it. So I think it's overused. I think it's a word that's definitely used too much. And it goes back to this quest, if you want to call it, for the perfect swing. You know, I wrote about it, I think, in the book about there's this quest for the perfect swing. And if you can develop this perfect swing, then you're going to have on-field performance, you know, enhancement or whatever you want to call it. If you develop this perfect swing and you can do it over and over and over, your on-field results will be better. And it's quite opposite of that from what I've learned. It's you got to have six or seven multiple perfect swings. You got to have a perfect swing for a high pitch, perfect swing for a low pitch, perfect swing for an inside pitch, outside pitch. You got to have a perfect swing like you talked about when the ball gets too deep on you and you lean your body back and square it up. You got to have a perfect swing when you're fooling the pitch and it's going to land right out in front of the plate and you commit and you got to still go hit it. So the perfect swing is something that has to happen, but it's got to be six or seven different perfect swings in order to compete. So, yeah, I think balance is something that's definitely, I wouldn't call it overrated, but I think it's overworked. I think it's too focused on sometimes. There's got to be balance, but there's also got to be that fine line of being an athlete too as well.
Awesome, awesome. Well, listen, we are coming to the end, but I want to address one more issue, and then what we're going to do after we address this issue, I want you to talk about the Rio TV because I think a lot of coaches, hopefully I said it correctly, but a lot of coaches can really benefit from this. And then at the end, you're going to explain anything you'd like about your program, about any advice you want to give coaches. It's kind of like your platform out there for the last part of the show. Tell our listeners around the world anything you like. But before we do that, we've got all this, you know, the hitting drills. We've got all the philosophy, all the things we talked about. Okay, now we've got to translate this on the field. How do you get your guys, and I know it could be another topic, but just give us a general idea. How do you get your guys to prepare for real game situations when it comes to hitting?
Well, that's a great way to end the segment. I think this is where most players and coaches fail as far as being able to create that. We're blessed here. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of it, but we have a pro batter. We have two or three pro batters here where it's a live video simulator where it can simulate a live pitch on a video screen and it throws the ball up to 105 miles an hour. It has nasty movements. You can throw sinkers, cutters, every pitch you can imaginable, left-handed, right-handed, out of the stretch, out of the windup. So we're blessed to have that on a regular basis. But if you don't have that, you have to be able to do something on a regular basis that's challenging in BP. Too many times kids show up for BP and they get a coach throwing them a wiffle ball, or, you know, if they're high school or college, they're on the field, they're moving them over, getting them in, and the velocity is at like 40 miles an hour, and it's not very challenging at all. So if you want better on-field results, the BP on a regular basis has to be more challenging. Too many times we take wheelhouse BP, as I call it, as you just kind of throw it in their wheelhouse, and you just let them hit it and make them feel good about themselves. There's times where hitters need to be patted on the back and boost it up as far as confidence, but most of the time, hitters these days need to be challenged more. So if we can get the BP, everyday BP, the BP sessions on a regular basis, whether you're in a cage or you're outside, if we can make that more challenging and more game-like, then guess what happens to the games? The games are easier. So I hated machines growing up. I hated hitting off machines. I thought it messed with my timing and it was hard to hit. But looking back on it, it was just an excuse because I never worked on it. So once I got to Lewisburg State, we hit off machines every day. I mean, there was literally six machines lined up, left-handed curveball, right-handed fastball, and left-handed slider. and you just rotate through cages every day. And what it does is it just allows you to see that game-like pitching over and over and over on a regular basis, and it just makes the games that much easier. So looking back, I gave a lot of excuses saying, oh, I can't hit machines, they're too hard, I can't time it. The reality of it was just too hard, and I couldn't get it done, so it hurt my confidence. So I think whether it's machines, whether it's live arm, whether you have a pro batter, it doesn't really matter what you're doing as long as you're challenging kids on a regular basis. That's the only way that you're really going to get better on-field performance is to challenge your players on a regular basis every day in BP.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said that because, I, you know, after a while, I started thinking as a coaching, and boy, we're wasting a lot of time with BP, and I spent a lot of time in Japan, and I'm watching the Japanese, you know, during BP at the pro level, you know, they got right-handed pitchers, left-handed pitchers. Those pitchers weren't throwing the ball straight. They're throwing the ball all over the place. They're mixing up pitches. They're preparing them for game situations. Have you done that?
Yes. I mean, we try to get as creative as we could possibly be. I mean, we even get those little blitz balls or those half-moon wiffle balls and have them move 7 feet and try to get them to understand what the strike zone is and where the strikes are and what to do. We do a lot of vision, pitch recognition stuff. So you have to get creative. You have to do things differently too. You can't get in that same everyday boring approach because then it becomes boring for you. So you have to do new and exciting drills, new and exciting stuff on a regular basis to just make the BP exciting. I think too many times it's just BP. You have no idea how many times I've been told, oh, it's just BP. Well, that just BP is probably the most important time of your day to actually get better. So I agree. I mean, anything you can do, moving baseballs, wiffle balls, whatever you can do to actually challenge a hitter is going to be beneficial long term.
Now, BP could also, if you had a bad round, that could also affect what you're going to do in a game or vice versa. If you have a real good round, should you just keep hitting or should you just get out and get ready?
Again, that's personal preference. I mean, I was the type of hitter that I didn't need to take 200 swings to get loose. I want, you know, 50 good ones and I'm ready to roll. But again, it goes back to your preparation, like how well have you prepared during the week or before the game to get in there and compete. So the number of hacks is really dictated by the individual and where they're at in their development. I know this as far as the youth levels are concerned, they just don't hit enough. So the youth levels, what I mean by youth is like high school and under, it's just they just don't hit enough. You know, they show up to a game an hour before the game, they warm up, they get 20 hacks, and then they're going. So it's all individualized. It's all kind of your own preference, but at the same time, you definitely got to do what works, I guess, for you.
You know, that's a great point. You're right. Our youth players just do not swing the bat enough. Like anything else, they don't take ground balls enough. They just don't do, you know, in the old days, and I hate to bring up the old days because I'm a lot older than you are. You know, we did all this stuff on our own. You know, we didn't need anybody to hit us ground balls. We just did it on our own, threw a ball against the wall. We swung the bat all the time. Made us better.
Isn't that the truth? I mean, think about how many hitting coaches are out there these days. How'd we learn how to hit? We just copied our favorite player.
Yeah.
So there's not enough of, you know, that specifically in the youth today. I mean, you'd be surprised how many kids I ask who their favorite player is. They don't even watch baseball. I'm like, how do you even know? You don't even have a favorite player. You don't watch baseball. How do you expect to play baseball better if you don't watch baseball? So I guess it's just this generation. But, yeah, it's definitely something the kids these days just don't get enough hacks and they just don't spend enough time and effort into doing.
Well, Troy, let me tell you, this has been a great, great talk. What I want to do here is just let's end it with, you know, whatever you like to say, tell us about definitely the Rio TV and anything else you'd like to give advice to all our coaches, players, and parents all over the world that are going to be listening to this.
Well, let me just start by the most important thing that is important to me as far as, you know, being a coach and a mentor and someone that I guess kind of has a spotlight right now is, this goes out to coaches and parents specifically, is we have to make sure we're role models for these kids these days. You know, you're not going to be perfect. You're not going to do everything right. But we have to make sure we understand the influence we have on these kids. Parents do as well. It's like we have to understand, like, it's a game. It's a baseball game. Whether your kid goes 0-for-4 or 4-for-4 in a game should not change your relationship with them. It should not change the way you treat them. It shouldn't change anything. It's a game. So the influence of the coach, the coaches that are listening right now, you have to understand the influence you have is huge. You might be that only influence that kid has in their lives. And you're going to be an influence no matter whether you like it or not. You're going to be a good influence or a bad one. You're going to be a positive role model or you're going to be a bad one. So you make that choice to be a positive one. You know, with me personally and what we do here at Rio Athletics, everything that we do is here is encouraging and stuff like that. But we're tough on kids. We have some structure and some discipline. We challenge them, but we do it out of love. We do it out of care. And we'll never demean a kid. We'll never cuss at a kid. We'll never get on them. But we'll challenge them too as well. So you don't have to be soft. You don't have to be, you know, this coach that's like, oh, everything's great today. You can be hard on kids, but you got to show them that you love them. You got to show them that you care. You got to know that you're an integral part of their lives, and what you're doing in their lives is going to make a lasting impression, whether good or bad. So that's kind of what I have as far as closing on that.
Awesome. And how about the Real TV?
So what we have as far as information here, I wrote a book, Nine Innings of Hitting. You can get that on Amazon, iTunes. I think you can get it on Kindle, too, as well. Coach Jose Rijo Berger, which you need to have on your show here, he wrote a book, too. It's called Creating Winning Relationships Through Sports. It was an Amazon bestseller, too. It's pretty amazing. Any parent and coach needs to read that to get the perspective into play of what your job and role is as a coach. The Rijo Baseball TV is something that we just launched here not too long ago, and what it is it's basically our video blog portal for all information, all instruction. There's over 200 drills videos in there from hitting to fielding to catching to everything. There's weekly TV shows that we do with specific topics. There's weekly video blogs. We do about 5 or 6 video blogs per week on hitting, catching, base running, everything like that. There's my audio book. If you're dumb like me and you don't like to read, you can get the 9 Innings of Hitting on audio, and you can get the Creating Winning Relationships Through Sports on audio too as well. So that's all in there. There's challenges of the week. We challenge coaches. We challenge kids. We challenge players. It's basically the biggest video portal that you're going to ever have as far as instruction. It's always new inputted information. It's great. It's Sports Center type introduction type stuff. It's great. So check out RijoBaseball.tv. Subscribe to that for only, I think it's like $9 a month. You get so much information in there that you'll love.
Troy, that's awesome. And we will definitely have Jose Rijo on the show. Look forward to that. I want to thank you so much for your time. I'm definitely going to stay in touch, and I will be in touch. I want to talk about some other things in the future with you. You know, again, God bless you for what you do. Thank you for being on the show.
Pete, thank you for having me. You're amazing. Keep doing the good work, and God bless everybody listening.
All right, and folks, listen, you got to go on Twitter. Troy's on there all the time, at Troy P. Silva. He tweets all the time some great stuff. You're going to learn a lot. He'll also answer your questions, and, you know, check him out on RijoAthletics.com. Don't forget, if you're going to, you know, we want you to help, obviously, promote the show to all your friends. You can go to our Twitter at Inside Pitch Show. Also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/InsidePitch. And our website has a lot of information, InsidePitchPodcast.com. We'd appreciate you guys spreading the word on social media and letting more coaches, players, and parents know about the program. And don't forget to email me, because I love getting your emails, because I'm able to respond. I can, you know, today's technology is awesome. We can respond from anywhere, anywhere in the world, anywhere I'm at peter@insidepitchpodcast.com. And finally, don't forget iTunes and Stitcher, any major podcast outlet, click subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating. We'd love for you to do that. That helps the show going on. And remember, coaches, education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter, coaches. Thanks for listening to the show that interviews baseball's best coaching minds with innovative thoughts that also like to challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day and see you on the next show.
This has been the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at InsidePitchPodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter, and get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.